So this is our game hacking panel. Introduce yourself.
I'm Hugme, for those of you few people who don't know who I am. I was on the hacking panel for years and years and was asked to do gaming hacking as well. Later, I'm going to be hacking Diablo 2. If any of you are familiar with that one, you know it's a small game, nobody plays.
Diablo 3, I hear, is coming out soon.
I know. I couldn't get a hot copy of it, though.
My name's Ken Leitner. I've been writing and designing, programming video games for way too long now, probably longer than I should admit to. And one of the things that... can everybody hear me in the back? Am I okay? Without? Yeah, okay. I don't... Not good with microphones, I guess. Anyway, one of the things that became clear to us at the very beginning was that we were going to have to figure out how it was that people were hacking games so that we could maybe possibly do something discouraging about it. Not that we would ever stop you, but we did lay some mines for you. He had a good story. I'll have to have him tell you later. So anyway, you know, back in the day, there were a number of schemes for protecting your game. They would lay codes in error sectors of floppy disks. They would do document protection checks. Nowadays, same kind of thing. They find some weird spot on a CD that isn't normally copied, put an RSA signature in there, and then decrypt the executable on your install. But the heart of it is that if it's on your machine, you're going to be able to hack it if you're determined enough. Of course, now most of the games that we play on PC are MMOs, where all the really cool data is not on your machine anymore. So sad. So you'll have to go to other hacking panels to figure out how to crack their servers, but that's not my job. So what we have,
or get us drunk and ask us later.
So what we have here for you today, Hugme is going to show you a little bit of how to modify data on the fly in a game. So if you're running any kind of game, he's going to do Diablo. You can modify your character on the fly. We did similar things running the old original Counter-Strike in the early revs to get, you know, more money on the starting characters. And
you'd hack Doom.
Doom, I bought Doom. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I mean hack it to get more money, more bullets, more characters, you know, without using the guide code.
I don't know. I guess I just didn't need to.
Wow.
But by the time I got to Counter-Strike, I was getting old. Anyway, what I also have here is to show you a little bit of the software hacking where you can change program code to do what you want to do. And we've got an hour total here. How many of you guys write C for a living? Okay, there's about 8 now. Of the people that write C, how many of you know Intel assembler machine code? So there's about 5 of you that will be able to follow closely what I'm doing on the hacking software code, but hopefully I'll at least interest a few more of you in what might be possible. And for the rest of you, at least know that what I'm showing you is possible on just about any size program. And you know, if you're writing software or you're in the business of delivering software to your clients and it's on their machine, they're going to be able to do this. They're going to be able to make it do or make it expose whatever they want it to do. Okay? Okay, so let me see if I can get this laptop on the screen. Yeah. Okay. This is my little sample program. And I just want to walk through it 30 seconds. I just have a main. It's going to call a function to do a document check. My document check.
You can't see the dark blue at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, turn off the camera.
Well, if these lights were off. Anybody? Is there somebody anywhere near the lights that can turn them all the way off?
Don't narrate it.
Yeah, okay.
Use a white background.
If you do a control C, they get selected.
Yeah, that might help.
Yeah.
There we go. Turn off colors.
Batch room, sorry. Okay, so my little document program is just going to roll a random number and fail you most of the time. 99 out of 100 times. All it does is print, you know, you have lost, you're a loser, wait for a character, or go down, and if you pass the document check, it'll say program runs. Okay? So, just to sort of work you into this slowly, what I'm going to do actually probably easier to show it to you over here. So here's the same program in doc, just in case I had problems like I had. So this is not easy to read either, but this is what it would look like if you had the C source code there, you had compiled it in debug mode, and you would see each of these function calls is just going to equate to some assembler code or some machine code, depending on how you look at it.
To make it easier to read, can we get the Windows magnifier open?
That help at all? I mean, if you really, really want to see this, you're just going to have to move closer because it's dense. I apologize. And it's a lot of numbers, and if you're not used to reading X, you know, some of it's just going to go zoom until you get used to that.
A hardware solution.
Okay, so anyway, what I'm going to be looking for is, and almost all games are written in C, so you're going to see this kind of pattern. I'm going to see a push, which is going to push the address of this string up there, and that's that number over there, 00420030. That's just where in RAM that string is stored. And then I'm going to see a call to printf, which is probably not going to have the same number when I get to release mode. And then when it returns, you'll see some stuff like that. And, wow, this is tricky with half of it off the... I'm also looking for a conditional statement here. This is, I don't know which way is easier to see this, but here's where I'm calling the document check. I'm doing some kind of test here to see if that number is zero. That number is going to come back in EAX if you're familiar with Intel. And then I'm going to do a jump relative to whether or not I got back the result I'm looking for. Okay. So, shift up. Okay, so now I've recompiled in release mode, so I'm not going to have any debug information. And you might notice that this is not my laptop there. Hence the really weird colors. Okay, and what I'm looking at is actually off the screen. About there. Okay, so I've got a couple of windows up so I can show you some other stuff later. But up here is basically just the assembly the assembly language, the disassembly of the program we're running. Any program you can pull up in Visual C and look at that if you want to. Your average game now is about, you know, 1 million or 2 million bytes of that. So the hacking process can be tedious. Just a little. Now, I've gone ahead. Something else you need to be aware of with C, there's a certain amount of code that runs sort of the compiler adds to your program that then calls your program. So the code we're in right now is what C coders call the startup code. Luckily, I have figured out ahead of time. That call right there calls into main. And now I can actually figure this out pretty easily myself because I have a very simple program. All I have to do is step through this and wait till something changes here. Because basically I'll be stepping through this startup code. I'll step over one of these call statements there and the whole program will run. And I'll know, okay, that's the one I need to step into. And I can keep going down until I get kind of the feature I'm looking for. Today we have such a simple program that right here is what we've got. So that call right there is going to call our document check function. That test right there is going to test the return code. And this jump not equals here is going to either jump to run the program or, assuming I don't get something strange back, so I got back zero, which means I failed the document check. So this test AL equates to this EAX register there. There's a long legacy how AL becomes EAX. It's a whole other story. So I'm not going to do the jump here because EAX is zero. And there's the program window. So I'm going to come into here, and this call statement, that's my print statement. So you're going to see when I step over that, you have failed the document check, right? So there are a couple things that I wanted to point out here in terms of hints. We saw output here. We can also double check. Remember I said it's going to push the address of the string there. So we, while we're looking through the code, we can use this memory window here, 40, to look inside and see what we've got. And you can see FRAM at that address is the print we just got. So I know I'm on the right function call, right? Everybody that can following so far, right? Okay. So having done that, alongside there you saw what those assembler instructions we were showing, what they equaled in machine code, where they were, how big they were, and all that. So I can kind of scan through here to find a unique set of numbers. I can pick any length numbers. And it turns out right here, that's the call into the document check, DBFFFFFF, for everybody that's, you know, like the guy on Matrix that can read, that can visualize the window. That's a jump relative negative 35, right? Recall relative. Anyway, this is our test right there, and that 75 is the jump not equals. So I'm going to change it to a 74. And then I'm going to run the program again. Okay. There's our end of our startup code. And now if you look here, that's slightly different. Instead of jump not equals, it's going to jump if it's equals. So if the document check returns zero, my program will run forward instead of giving me the error message. So step over it, and notice it'll jump. Will your push call there? And if I look at the address that's being pushed there, I have a slightly different string. That'll be a program apt. Okay. So that was really fast. Obviously, doing the real thing takes a little more time, a little more effort. Does anybody have any questions so far? Back in the back there. Well,
if you don't actually have it, can you run through it like that?
Well, right. You certainly can. I wanted to show you the C code because I knew in this audience there was likely to be a lot more people who could read C than could read disassembly in the window there, just to kind of show you what was happening. But what I did is I then compiled that C code in release mode. So I knew what the program was going to do, which does make it a lot easier. But I didn't have the C code kind of to reference while I'm stepping through it. I mean, only because I've gone through it a couple times and done this talk before can I tell you, you know, that call is what it is. Otherwise, you know, you really have to kind of go trial and error on there. But like I said, if you can get the program up in a separate window, you got dual monitors or up or whatever, most software is pretty object-oriented, right? That's a good thing, right? So a lot of times you're going to hit a call, or, you know, it's C++ jump call and then jump, and it's going to do something distinctive, right? Pop up a doc check window, for example, or you know, for today's code, maybe decompress, de-encrypt the executable into RAM. And if you're looking at the right places, you'll be able to tell what's going on. I'm sorry, what?
What application are you looking at based on
my credit? Just this is a ancient version of Visual Studio, Visual C6. Yeah, 10 years old.
That's the last version that's any good.
That's why I'm still using it. That, I'm broke. Anybody have a job, by the way? Okay. That good, and I'm going to switch over. Hackney's going to have a little bit of setup time, I guess.
Yeah, we got to switch monitors over. My talk is a little flashier with more pictures.
Less numbers.
More
numbers.
Before I start, is there anybody here who works for Blizzard? Just thought I'd throw that out there. By the way,
yet another reason why my program was so simple. I didn't want to use somebody else's.
Diablo 2 is one of my absolute favorite games. Is why I used it. Did I use Diablo 1 in the last panel, or did I use
it? I don't remember. I thought it was 2.
Either.
So I'm gonna see if I can get the monitor to come up.
Well, I should have tested it. There you go.
There we are. Okay. All right. So we're going to bring up Diablo 2. What I'm going to do, basically, is... Oh, that's not what I wanted. I wanted that.
We might want
to... I'm going to run.
We might want to zoom back out. On the
Yeah.
On the projector. Yeah, he might have bigger fonts than me.
Okay, we're gonna delete this one, and I'm going to turn this mic off. Okay, who should I pick?
Necro.
Necro it is.
Screw it.
Have all of you played Diablo 2?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make absolutely sure. I know it's a silly question, but...
Wait a second. How many people's code is C again?
Okay. So the first thing I'm going to have to do... is I need to figure out, let's say, my strength. Where's it, A? If you look at my strength, it's currently 15.
Looks like
so
a 16.
I am... It does. Yeah, that's their Diablo font. In order to figure out how to change that 15 to what I want, I'm going to have to find that 15 in the code.
Hack the font.
Hmm?
Why don't you go ahead and hack the font so we can all...
Oh, okay. Hang on, I'll work on that. I'll have it ready for next panel.
16.
Just saying, we need
in order to it just trust me, it is actually a 15. It's just Diablo's fonts are horrible. In order to find that 15 to be able to change it, I can't just look for 15s. I'll find about 2 million of them, and if you start changing every one, you'll be there for months. So what I'm going to need to do is get that 15 to change to something and narrow down what I'm looking for. So the first thing, in fact, I'm going to have to do is to level the character up so that I can change that. So we are going to go and fight. Is there anything you wanted to talk about? Because this is going to take a minute.
15 and whatever program you're going to use to find it, can you level?
Hmm? The program I'm going to use is called T-Search.
Search for 15.
Yes.
Find which numbers change.
All right. Maybe we should hold the questions to the end because I think most of what you're asking will be obvious by the time he's finished.
Once I start doing this, it'll.
I just curious things like our money. Search for the first value.
Right. Right. I can't change that 15 to something else until I level the character. Yeah.
You just wanted to play.
Let's turn run on so that goes a little faster.
A lot of other games, it changes automatically.
We're paid to hear these guys talk.
Yeah, but I'm really dull right now because I've got to kill some monsters here. Yes. Yes, you would. As a matter of fact, let's use that potion there.
Hey, Rob, why don't you come and tell us that story about Battles of Destiny?
Yeah. All right, well, while this is going on, I actually used to work with Ken a long time ago doing early 90s, doing hack-proofing games, and one of the games, Battles of Destiny strategy game, we actually deliberately put an extremely simple check that all you had to do was change a jump not to a jump not equal into the code. Literally, we knew what hackers would be doing, so we decided we'd play a little trick. So what we did is we made it very easy for a hacker to hack the game. They thought turned out they actually posted this on, at the time, would have been a board. The next thing we know, we got a flamagram back from them saying, "You ruined my reputation," because what we had done was we detected when that game was hacked. We actually put a secondary trap in that said, "Ooh, the program changed there." And so we let the program run for 10 turns, which take 10 or 15 minutes, long enough for the hacker to think it's great. Then we'd turn your combat strength down to zero. Then another 10 turns, and we'd say, "Thank you for playing a hacked copy of the game. Feel free to purchase this game." And so so there's a lot of games that... So we got some flames about that, but...
I learned that from Bardstale for some reason.
Yes. I am now leveled. All right. So if I look at my stats, I am able to add to that 15. So what I'm going to do is Alt-Tab out of the game, and I'm going to run T-Search. And I'm going to look in memory the currently running game for... that 15. So I'm going to tell it what program I need to run it on, which should be a game.exe. Alright. So once I find that, I'm going to look for the value.
Names.
Yeah. Exact value of 15. And I get 8,816 answers. So I go back into Diablo. And I'm going to change that 15 to a 16, adding one. All right. So now I go here. Click on my dot. Did I click on the right thing? Yes. Search in that for one that is now 16. I get two answers. One of those two is my strength. In doing this over and over again, I know it usually happens to be the second one. So I'm going to take that. I'm going to open it up. I'm going to open it up.
doing here. So. That's not what I want. Edit. Okay. Where is my change? I just did this yesterday. I swear.
Oh, there you go.
I don't think that's what I want, though.
Yeah, it's right there. 16!
Where
are you people
it?
That can't read hex?
There it is. It's this window up here. So I'm going to change this to 200. All right. I'm going to go back to Diablo. You can do this for gold. You can do this for experience points. You can do this for your tree, your skill tree. Now, when doing this, when playing a game online, it gets a little tougher, like he says, that all your stats are held online, which is mostly true. Mostly true. Believe it or not, your stats are pulled onto your machine for short periods of time. This is to cut down on network traffic. With Diablo, and they have some ways to figure this out if you're not really careful about it, what you want to do is make the hack and then save, pull your character out of the game really fast. Because it will save your character back to the server, including a lot of your stats. Be careful about it because they do checks on it. Basic checks of, you know, is this really sane? Should a level 2 character have a strength of 200? They'll probably catch that. But if I add incrementally one every few weeks, they're not going to catch it. If I add gold, they don't catch gold because so much gold is found during the game. Also, weapons. Find out what the highest the weapon can carry. If you pick up a bow, and the bow is a attack of 15 to 18, and you go online and figure out, well, that type of bow can go all the way up to a 20 to 22, go on, change that type of bow, save your character, the next time you bring that bow up, it'll be the highest stats you can get. That's how, when you see on eBay people selling weapons, they're always the highest possible stats those weapons can have. This is how they did it. This is exactly the same as how they did it. Are there any questions about this?
Where did you get T-Search?
It's free online.
Google it.
Yeah, Google T-Search. it works for just about any game you can play. It's good to have the... You just need to change the number, bring it up, change it in memory, and have unlimited ammo. You can also do cool things with T-Search. For example, this button here that I clicked before, let's say this was ammo. I change the ammo to what I want, whatever the highest I have, I can have. Click that button and it'll lock it. So basically, every time you shoot, it subtracts a bullet, then adds it back. I was playing Command and Conquer 2. No, Command and Conquer 1 against someone who had done this to me and I hadn't realized it. And the element that you picked up in Diablo...
Crystal Wheel.
Yeah. He had set that for infinite. And so he would just start building stuff, and I just couldn't figure out how he would get so much equipment before I did until I figured out what he was doing. The one person who'd always beat me, I couldn't... And yeah, that was the trick.
People have been very creative with the online games too, because it's not everything. When you're playing a server-based game, obviously most of the important data is hopefully on the server if it's a well-coded game, which most of them are. But there's always information that has to be on the client that maybe the player shouldn't know. So, for example, one of the popular Counter-Strike 1 hacks was... You didn't have to change anything about your character because you're playing online and it's, you know, whatever. But they would modify the code so it didn't render walls. So, you know, you're sitting there hiding around the corner from this guy and he always knows you're there because the walls aren't actually rendering on his machine.
That's there's a Diablo for that called Map Hack, where it's exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. He rendered the map a little bigger. He turned on all the light, you know. Which there are some aspects of Map Hack I wish they put in so that you could see the monsters on the map. It's kind of neat.
Okay, so. I'm sorry. Do you have more?
No, I was going to open it up for questions.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
All that map hack thing where you're trying to keep the walls being rendered, like, how would you determine the characters that that represent the rendering part?
The wall part of that. Well, with most, I mean, obviously this took him some time, right?
Right, yeah.
But with most rendering, the characters are going to go through an entirely separate pipeline than the walls. So. I think Half-Life was mostly BSP. I never looked at the source code, even though I think somebody posted it. But you know, the BSP they don't run their characters through the BSP. So at some point, you know, he's going to see one of those nice, beautiful object-oriented calls, and all the rooms are going to render. And he can put no ops, which are hex code 90, over the call to render those walls and see what happens. And see if he's got the right thing or not. Maybe the characters don't come out the first try, then he tries someplace else. But yeah, I mean, no doubt, it took some time to figure out.
It's not rendering the walls, but it's not rendering the floors as well?
Chances are it wouldn't render the floors, but these guys that are using that hack, I mean, you know, Counter-Strike 1, people had memorized the levels anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you keep from running into them?
They would have memorized the level.
Yeah, have you ever seen people play Counter-Strike?
Surely there's more of you out there that have played Counter-Strike than C-coders, right?
Say I'm a game designer and I want to prevent stuff like this.
You come to a panel like this and we tell you all about it.
Right. I mean, stuff like T-shirt runs in memory, right? So I can put my code to check for T-shirt running.
You can, but then you can alter T-search slightly so it looks a little different.
Sort of the same thing you might do if you were writing a virus.
Yeah, it's exceedingly easy to make a program completely invisible to something that's looking for parts of the code.
Some of the latest document check schemes on Windows have done something or other to disable int3, which is the debug interrupt. Which means I can't hit F10 without the whole program just running, the rest of the program running, instead of just skipping down one line. But all that means is I can't use Visual C. There are other debuggers I can use that run outside of Windows. And they're not going to, there's just really nothing they can do about that kind of thing.
There are actually entire suites of programs just to get around what you're talking about, and the reason for those suites are people who write viruses and try to get around viruses, and with a virus you don't want to be detected. A lot of the things they're doing is taking the calls, like if one of the calls is to add 200, it'll add 201 and then subtract 1. And if you find that, it'll add 202 and subtract 2, and the code will be completely different. Let me finish up one thing. If it's very hard, like he said earlier, it is, once you give someone a piece of software, it's theirs. They can take it apart, they can decompile it, they can do whatever they want to. It's very hard to get them not to do things like this. To get them not to do things like this online is a little bit easier, but it requires a lot of error checking. Check for sanity. See how many for, like, the gold. See how much gold you handed out. Do a record of how much gold you handed out, and then check when that user saves their character if they have that much gold. You know, check in both places. There are little tiny things you can do to try to prevent this with online, but once you give someone a game, it's theirs. You can decompile it, take it apart, you know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, so the basic strategy is, like you said, is to keep everything on the server and don't make any of those decisions on the client side. But, you know, there's a constant pull between the security of the game and the performance of the game.
Right. The more you do on the server side, the more network traffic is going to be, the more you're going to have to send them and have them to go through. Just trust as little as you can from the client. Literally. Yeah, just don't trust them.
Well, I was going to say, the issue with running this, just basically having a game check just the memory while it's running, is you're going to have two things happen. And you can pretty much look at what happened to Blizzard with WoW recently, their little memory checker. One, people found out about it and got mad. Blizzard doesn't trust us. That, oh, my God, they're looking at whatever I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. And it's being reported back to Blizzard, regardless of what it is. And two, you get false positives, like what happened to the Linux community running, you know, WoW via emulator. You ended up with people who were, had their accounts banned because it's, you're running third-party software, oh my God! No, we're just running it on Linux. If you give us a client.
Yeah. Right.
So,
yeah, there's...
I'm guessing the Linux group is even smaller than the C group, though, right?
Yeah, try asking about the FreeBSD group. That's the one I run.
That was warp.
Anybody else have questions?
I could run multiple modems on it really easy.
We're doing some server based. Remember, it wasn't the like Diablo 2 Kindle bot, for instance. Didn't it check like messages were coming back to the Diablo server to determine like whatever was happening on the stream?
Yes, but if.
And they upgraded the software as they went to catch more and more stuff.
There were, but at the same time, they were checking what came back, but at the same time, you can only do so much as far as checks. Because if I walked over and picked up a box of gold, a lot of that, you know, you sent me that you sent that much gold, but what else have I picked up? You're just sending me one part of the map. It couldn't physically check if I picked up that box or not. So a lot of it had to have some leeway built into it, otherwise there would be so much network traffic the game would be unplayable.
I was meaning the Pendlebot itself, the hack, was checking the network traffic. That's how it was going to be on, how it was running.
Well, it just it checks the information coming back to it. The checking the network traffic is a different type of hacking. That's for actually trying to hack into the gaming server. Totally different panel.
or apparently when Hug Me's drunk.
are there any panels about writing bots?
There's a hacking 101. Is the hacking panel still in here?
Yeah,
there's a hacking 101, 102.
But is that actually talking about bots on MMOs, or is that more just...
If you ask about it, they'll talk about it, is how that hacking panel works.
201 Whatever. Is the best one for that.
Yeah.
101 tomorrow night, 201 Sunday night. Probably 201.
Yeah,
101. Windows has like a built-in macro tool they've had there forever that I would assume would work. I mean, you know, you just have to work around that.
Yeah.
Windows has a nice central pipeline for all its events. It'd be pretty easy.
Yeah, I don't do too much of this in Windows. Most of mine is in Unix, Solaris, FreeBSD, things like that. So I use Truss. Again, even fewer people. I heard one laugh back there. One.
Hey, I got you beat even on the assembler group back there.
Yeah.
Or your mouse and keyboard, you used the word earlier.
Event.
Macro.
I haven't spent a lot of time worrying about that from a game hack point of view. I mean, there's one built into Windows you could start with, but there's probably better ones out on there.
Honestly, I prefer hardware solutions. Take those buttons at the top that's supposed to like open up Windows Media Player and make it do something else.
I think that plugs into the same macro software I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want to start hardware solutions to botting, back in Final Fantasy XI, how they changed the phishing system, the best way to fish bot was to rig a device that would repeatedly hit a key at a set interval. And somebody took one of those little dipping birds.
Or
two of fishing bots. There were little
unlike the mechanical answer.
Hardware solutions. Oh yeah, gone wild. I'm gonna get into the porn. Where porn industry is gonna be hardware solutions gone wild. It'll be dipping birds showing their gears.
I don't want my hardware exposed. although I hear it runs cooler that way.
Personal anecdote, I just finished writing a page bot in World of Warcraft based on breaking the encryption. And I think this hasn't been done before. The idea is the actual login authentication steps are really strong. Like it takes 3 days to break it. But if on a good system with a lot of machines working for it. But if you just write the in-game encryption, it's really easy because it's a simple XOR. And I wrote software to do this, and it allows me to modify the network system. So I can inject packets into the stream that will simulate phishing and electric loop. So my thought with this whole thing is, well, the game isn't very well encrypted, and also everything you've typed out isn't encrypted as well. So government agencies interested in spying on what people are saying online aren't really given a challenge with the game at the moment. So if I make this public and people are able to cheat at the game with it, wouldn't that prompt Blizzard to fix it by increasing the protection on the protocol? Because there is no way to catch this since it's not running on the same.
You're running when you increase that, you're running into the same problem mechanic we mentioned earlier of, do you want really a really secure game, or do you want a really fast, well-running game?
For example, PGP, which everybody's familiar with, I don't even know if that's still popular or not, but basically did the same thing. They had a much weaker algorithm. I think they used DSA.
I think they used
DSA. It was like 48-bit initially internally, and the only thing they used RSA for was to encrypt the key that they were going to use to plug into the DSA. So if you wanted to break DSA, you didn't have to go figure out the factorial problem. All you had to do was skip in a couple lines to break the 48-bit DSA. But it's the same thing. RSA is not a fast encryption program, so there has to be a compromise between performance and effectiveness.
I guarantee you that it was way easier than it used to be. I'm not breaking DES.
But Zor sounds pretty bad, I agree.
We
used that before.
They run the whole game through TCP. One stream. Your
yeah.
messages wait for your swings.
Yeah.
But I mean that's generally the way those things move forward. But I mean you might also lose your account in the process. So I'm not going to recommend anything. Any further questions?
What else?
Anybody making out in the back in the dark room?
is there anything else?
Wrong panel, I guess.
Is there anybody anything else y'all wanted to see?
Well, that's an open-ended question.
What do you got to do? Please don't expose your hardware. Anyway, if they want to stay on schedule.
Have 15 minutes.
I snuck in here like 5 minutes from now to get set up, so.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to go right to the
end.
Oh,
no, we're not over till.
Time travel again.
What's that?
We're not over for 45 minutes.
Okay. Seeing no questions.
Yeah.
Go
awesome.
Party, I guess.
Have fun. Thank you very much.